Hey, what's up, folks? Welcome to another edition of the On Texas Football live stream, the Sunday night live stream, but a very special one because we're breaking down the Texas spring game. We'll break it down from every different angle, of course, talk about all the headlines, talk about all the different storylines from the spring game. I am, of course, joined by Lifetime Longhorn CJ Vogel, joining me as well, and my man Jerry Hamilton, the man, the myth, the legend, Jerry Hamilton, joining me as well. What's going on, gentlemen? Jerry, man, how you doing? You guys were actually down there at the spring game and got a chance to see all the buzz. What was it like down there, just kind of at ground zero where everything was going down?
I just thought the crowd was awesome, right? Especially considering the weather. This is a fan base that's really feeling the Texas Longhorns again. It was a long trip down Badland, right? But it's a fan base that was jacked up. CDC continues to put on a great product, and Steve Sarkisian put out a great product yesterday. I know we can dissect it every single possession, every single player, but this was one of my main takeaway, guys. We live in an offensive world. Turn on any sport, the rules are for offense. Texas finally has a really good product to put on the field in a spring game. That was high-level quarterback play. That was elite talent at skill positions. That is depth on an offensive line. That is freshmen making plays. I mean, obviously, Ryan Wingo, Colin Simmons get the talk. Traylon's had a hell of a day. I rewatched the game today, Rod. Jordan Johnson Bell quietly made some really good plays out of the nickel position, right? I mean, a number of freshmen that played really well. There's a lot of NFL talent on the roster. And I thought that could not have been better for recruiting. It can't get better than that in the spring game. You have a guy with the last name Manning tearing it up, right? You have Trey Owens as a freshman looking good. Ryan Wingo is a freshman looking tremendous, getting all sorts of comparisons to Roy Williams now that Bobby had already been on that train. By the way, Bobby's not here. He's passed out from too many big quarterback plays. He hadn't seen it in so long. He needs some time to recuperate. But I just thought it was an unbelievable atmosphere for recruiting, whether that's portal guys or high school guys. That was a show. Hello, UT boy. Thanks for that super chat. GTH, yeah, back at you, UT boy.
Yeah, and I agree with Kelly at Horns Up there, CJ Vogel. Might be the most entertaining spring game I've ever seen, most competitive spring game I've ever seen. I think Sark had to be proud of that, the fact that it came down to the wire, Hail Mary at the end, that was intercepted by Jelani McDonald, throw that out there. But I thought it was a really, really just competitive spring game overall. I mean, I was actually riveted from beginning to end with that spring game.
Yeah, you don't see that too often in a spring game where it comes down to the last play. Or do you ever – I mean, Indiana, for God's sake, took knees for the final minute and a half. They pulled out victory formation. So I think for me, that was very encouraging. Those guys were out there to compete. They played hard through the whistle. Rod, you mentioned that Jelani McDonald interception because that was one of the bright spots, one of the only bright spots for that Texas secondary. So I get it. And also hats off to Trey Owens, who – in his first game, or, you know, quote-unquote live action at DKR, leads a go-ahead drive, you know, a game-winning drive with under 3 minutes left. That was really impressive. Of course, what the quarterbacks did with Arch Manning and Trey Owens, to me, it just kind of showcases that Texas is in the right spot moving forward under Sarkisian, the quarterback evaluator, and then being able to piece, you know, the playmakers around him. Seemingly everybody that you wanted to hear about from the wide receiver position made a play at some point. That to me is really encouraging, especially when you consider how much more open that rotation will be in 2024. If that's the case, then I think Texas should still be able to put together some really dangerous and exciting personnel packages with that group.
Hey, by the way, Indiana's got to take a knee in the spring game because you got to take that victory where you can get it.
Exactly. It.
Yeah, you got to
take a knee. And they're jealous Mario Cristobal had a chance and didn't take it.
Yeah, no doubt. That's a good point. I think we should start. We're going to take a lot of questions today, guys, because, of course, we understand everybody's really excited. Everybody's hyped about the spring game. So we want your reaction. So please hit us up. Super chats, jump to the front of the line. You can disrupt the show at any time. But throw the questions out there. We'll answer as many of them as we can. We really appreciate you guys and your participation. The On Texas family just continues to grow. Let's start with QWERTY here because I think it's an interesting one. Subject to change, obviously, but it looks like Texas quarterbacks for the next four seasons or are yours 2024, Manning 25 and 26, and Owens 2027? And I said this before the game. We were at Victory Lap. Shout out to everybody who came out to Victory Lap, though. You guys were amazing. Great to hang out once again with the family, kick and talk ball. But I said y'all gonna be impressed with Trey Owens. Just telling y'all gonna be impressed with the young man. He's got great arm talent. There is a chance, honestly, that you know that his arm stronger than Arch Manning's arm overall. I mean, he's got tremendous arm talent in terms of all the physical tools, but he's also got great confidence. So I know you're going to sit behind a Quinn Ewers and sit behind Arch Manning. You better have a lot of confidence, and he's got that in spades, tons of it. He's just got a lot of the raw material, his touch, his accuracy, and that was on display. And I'll say this, he's awesome. I don't know if you can, kind of like Malik Murphy, I don't know if you can kind of depend on having him 3-4 years down the line. Sark will continue to recruit elite quarterbacks. You know that. He's not going to let that room fall off. But guys, with Trey Owens, honestly, with the transfer portal being what it is, I mean, there's a good chance some guys come here, learn what they can from Sark, and maybe see opportunities elsewhere. That's just the reality of it. But there's no doubt Texas has right now one of the best quarterbacks, if not the best quarterback room in the country.
Yeah, and there's no doubt. I mean, look, Quinn's a third-year starter. He's the starting quarterback at Texas. Yesterday didn't do anything to change that. Texas may just have the best backup quarterback in the country. I mean, that may be the reality after yesterday. And he's got to do it in games more. That's a spring game. But a lot of zone defense, but I wouldn't play zone against Arch. I'll tell you that right now if he gets protection. that was ripping zone apart now. But I'll say this. The key is for a lot of these young guys in the program that isn't named Ryan Wingo and Colin Simmons. I mean, patience, right? I mean, Xavier Filsimi, very talented guy, had a couple of freshman moments. Yesterday happens. He's a freshman safety. That's his first game. I mean, scrimmages are not a game in front of 40,000 people. That's a little different reaction and mindset. So, these guys just have to have some patience. I think the interesting thing with Arch, whenever his time comes after this year to be the starter, is what Manning's only started 2 years and not gone to the NFL, guys. I mean, if anybody follows this family, they do things a little different than everybody else. And today what happened, CJ, I know you've been traveling, Rod. I don't know if you've heard it today, but the national media is out of control on this already. Of course, here's my issue with the national media. There was a show today where they're talking about Art should transfer now and go to Auburn or something. Look, here's where all these guys are hypocrites. And I know they're probably doing it for clicks and listens, but I'm going to go off on these guys for a second, because you can't on one day complain about how all these guys aren't patient and they go into the portal for the wrong reasons. Then after Arch goes 19 to 25, get on the freaking radio for 3 hours and say the guy should transfer. What's he going to sit for? Y'all are the biggest hypocrites ever. I know you just want to drive Arch Manning's name for clicks and listens, but man, get off your hypocrisy and be consistent for once. Y'all are ridiculous. All right, go ahead.
Yeah, but you need content though, Jerry. That's what you're talking about. You want to do a three? I've done 3-4 hour shows, man. Trust me, you do it for content. A lot of times, like Rod B, you're talking about both sides of your mouth. Yeah, because I do 4 hours of radio. So, yeah, you come and try to do 4 hours of radio and come up with different topics. Sometimes you got to do that.
So Rod's gonna say Art should transfer tomorrow. Everybody,
well, sometimes it's hard, man, to come up with content. You forget sometimes. I get that. CJ, your thoughts, brother, because the quarterback room for Texas right now, it seems to be an embarrassment of riches. There's no question about that.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, even Cole Lord had a touchdown pass late in that fourth quarter. He looked pretty good in that drive, whistled in a pass that got under the arm of Jordan Johnson Rubel, to your point, Jerry. He looked like he did pretty well up there. That whole quarterback room did. And, the way that Quinn's, series or two went down, I wish we did get to see a little bit more of him because, again, it is the spring game. It doesn't mean anything. We know Quinn's going to be the starting quarterback, but just to see what he's been working on, just to showcase something in that game for that the last 4 months, he's been fine tuning. I would have liked the theme just a little bit, of course, not in the cards on Saturday, but to the point, if Arch Manning is going to be your backup quarterback, you're going to be in a great spot, especially with the way that Trey Owens played as well. That room is going to continue to work and get each other better. Something that they've talked about in the past. We even talked to Quinn every now and then during the media availabilities. And he said, yeah, I love playing with Arch. I loved playing with Malik a year ago. And now adding Trey Owens to this room, It's only going to continue, you know, that inner room competition that, Rod, you've talked about back in the day at the DB room. It helps. It goes a long way to taking those steps in your development. And we certainly are going to see a Quinn Ewers in May and June back to work very quickly, because all he's hearing are those national media pundits that we were talking about, you know, talking about Arch Manning. Can he be the starter at Texas? Should he be transferring? What's the deal between the two? Well, I know Quinn Ewers is going to go out there and try and silence that with his play on the field in the fall, and it's going to start again up in May when he gets those throwing sessions going in Dallas.
All right, guys, before we talk about the weapons that Quinn and Arch Manning and Trey Owens have to throw to, because it's an impressive bunch of weapons. I think Longhorn fans are really excited about it. Bobby posed an interesting question, and I think it's a great place to start. With the performance of Arch and Trey Owens and how great they looked in the spring game, was it more the Texas passing game that we could project to be elite, or a world-class passing game? Or is it to pass defense for Texas, which was a liability last season and just continues to be a liability even this spring? And is it, which one is it? Is it more the defense and the liability on the pass defensive end? Or are we talking about the elite passing offense of Texas? CJ, I'll give it to you first. Which one do you think it was that we witnessed on Saturday?
I think it was more of the offensive side of the ball looking very good. Of course, the defense had its issues. There's a blown coverage with Terrence Brooks. It looked more like a blown communication. But at that same point, you didn't see your top end guys very often on Saturday from that secondary unit. Jahdae Barron was not on the field. We saw limited snaps from guys like Andrew Makuba, Manny Muhammad on the outside. Jalen Gilbo, I thought, had a pretty strong day, but he's not in your back end, you know. And so for that reason, it leaves you more of that, okay, what happens when this group is fully together? Because when they are fully together, and we've heard about it through the spring, they're actually a pretty good group. You know, they're making balls hit the ground. Manny Muhammad's been an interception machine. I lean towards the quarterbacks, the offensive line having a good day in protection, and then those wide receivers making plays. Funny, actually, there's probably a missed face mask on the Isaiah Bond 75-yard touchdown call, house call from Arch Manning. Yeah. Gavin Holmes actually gets his head tugged a little bit, and as a result, that's how you see the 3 yards of separation there. So I don't look at it entirely like the defensive secondary was flat-out bad. Again, Arch Manning was just on one. He looked really good that day, as did Trey Owens. To me, that wide receiving spot and the playmakers that they had, I thought they had more top-end talent on the field for a number of series than the defensive secondary did.
I thought, Rod, I mean, it's your area of expertise, but Texas was pretty vanilla defensively, as you would expect them to be, right? There were 2-3 blown coverages, and those are the plays that I think, you know, the bombs that are thrown get the headlines, right? They get the most clicks or whatnot. But I think it's a little of both, honestly. But what I thought, and I think it always is, it's never as good, it's never as bad, right? I mean, I think that's pretty much is the way to go most of the times. But I'll say this, what Arch and Trey did was they made really good throws against zone defense too. So the blown coverages, the long bombs, those guys, those are the ones that get the most clicks. But especially with Arch, he made some tremendous second and third progression throws that were on the money. His best throw of the day was dropped to Isaiah Bond in the end zone at the end of the half. That's so great. I thought it was a little of both. What was your thoughts on it?
I know it's tough for me because I'm biased. So I'm going to say this secondary. I mean, I follow the evidence. I'm a football investigator, and the evidence last year was your secondary was a liability, and you were giving up deep plays downfield. What did you do in the spring game? You gave up deep plays downfield. What are you supposed to focus on in spring? The liabilities, yep, in your skill set, what you're doing wrong and what's wrong with the defense, right? What's the weaknesses? And you're supposed to focus on that. I don't necessarily think they did. What was the issues? Communication issues, right, in the secondary. Then the first touchdown that was thrown was a communication breakdown.
Yes.
Triple cover three. Number two receiver instead of iron the number one. I mean, what? And the touchdown with Thatcher Milton, by the way, which was great. He had a great spring game. But Xavier feels to me after he catches it, puts his hands on his head because he realizes I took the wrong angle.
Yeah.
I took a bad angle to the football. Better angle. Touch. I got an interception.
Rod, that was his freshman moment, wasn't it?
Where he knew it. He was like, oh no, he didn't even try to chase the guy. He's like, I messed that up. You know, Kobe Black against Ryan Wingo. He plays bump and run on the boundary side. Ryan Wingo's just an awesome player, which we'll get into, but it was just bad technique. So that ends up being a touchdown. Like you pointed out the Gavin Holmes one that he gave up. He was playing bump and run, and it could have been a face mask, but also bad leverage. He was playing outside technique. Why are you playing outside? We don't have inside help. So I understand where you guys are coming from, but as a DB, I can tell you, there were just simple breakdowns. Same breakdowns we saw last year, same breakdowns the year before that. So to me, I'm coming from the DBs. They ain't like they, like you just say, okay, all the reasons y'all gave as to why it was the great offense, they were vanilla, like you said, Jerry. They were vanilla.
Yeah.
They weren't trying to fool you. They were just straight on man, straight on guys, you know, man against man pretty much most of the time. And you said, and I agree with you, CJ, the defense didn't even play their main guys. Also, the reason the defense was at a disadvantage, which is why I think it was more the defense. So I'm not taking anything away from the offense, but from a defensive guy's standpoint, glass half full, glass half empty, I'm with that end of it. I got to be a glass half empty kind of guy. That's disappointing because that the same weakness that you had last season, you're going to have again, looks like this season too, potentially.
Right. I wanted to get your thoughts on this. And, you know, at the safety spot, we saw it twice. We saw it with Michael Taft, with Jaden Blue cutting in front of him. And we saw it with the Xavier Filsomee when he put his hands on the head after Thatcher Milton caught that pass in front of him. But in the sense that the defensive backs need to play the ball more, and specifically at the safety spot, when they see everything that's in front of them and the ball is looking like it's coming right at them and they don't go necessarily for the guy cutting in front of them, how difficult is that in real time to – decipher if you're playing the ball versus playing the man? And, you know, at what point do you have to commit to either one? Because then you are either the a-hole or the hero by making the play on the ball, or you allow a touchdown with the guy, you know, catching the ball in stride going right in front of you. We saw it twice on Saturday. I thought it was, you know, maybe not a theme, but, you know, one time a bit of an anomaly, twice. Okay, maybe we didn't see the third time. So it wasn't, you know, something that I think was widespread throughout the secondary, but it's certainly head scratching because I don't think we saw a lot of that a year ago.
No, you're right about that. I mean, that's a great point. Getting to Justin Yarbrough's points, I think we can kind of get to both of them here. Justin, thank you for the super chat. We appreciate that. Said thoughts on the secondary. The defense called very vanilla, but still simple missed assignments. Most talent that we have had years. What are the expectations for them this season? Those were some of the young guys that you were just talking about, and you brought up Taft, but Xavier Filsomee. So that's obviously something that you can correct. That's why you got it on film. And you can correct those things with the younger guys. And that's something that's understandable. But just, I think as a whole, the secondary made very few plays on the football. I know they got an interception late in the game. I get that. And I know Kobe Black got an interception too. But those weren't – I mean, I believe Kobe Black's interception was it Cole Lord?
Walk-on quarterback, walk-on receiver.
Yeah, that's – so nothing against it, but exactly, right? I agree. In terms of the competition level there, I think we can agree that that's not really something the defense should be bragging about as a win for them. And then the Hail Mary was the other interception. So in terms of making plays on the football in critical moments, I just don't think I saw enough of that overall by the secondary, right? Just period. Now give me the play they made on the secondary behind the Hail Mary interception. And besides the Kobe Black, like I said, walk on interception. What was the play they made in the critical moment on the football? I just don't remember me.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what my overall criticism would be of the secondary. Listen, offense is going to win. Of course, they got great players. Look at that quarterback room. It might be the best quarterback room in the country or the best wide receiver rooms in the country. So, of course, they're going to win. That goes without saying. But you got to win your fair share. You got to win your fair share. And I don't think the DBs are winning their fair share at all. And that right now, they're not in a position to because a lot of these are missed assignments. Their eyes are in the wrong place. You know, mental breakdown. So you're not in a position to win if your either technique is bad initially or your eyes in the wrong place. So I'm not harping on the secondary too much. I apologize. I know because the spring game was awesome. And I want to talk about the positives because there were so many positives. But, you know, like I said, I got to look at it from that defensive standpoint. So I see it as probably more defensive missed assignments, but I agree with you guys. The offense looks great. So let's talk about the skill positions for the offense. Talk about the wide receivers. I've been saying it from, you know, day one, since the year started, really the spring started pretty much. Sark's going to have to expand his circle of trust of wide receivers. UT boy, I love it. Rod, who is in the circle of trust of wide receivers? Yes. Hey, UT boy, thank you. Hey, you know Jante's in there, UT boy. So that goes without saying. That's for sure. But who else is in the circle of trust now, guys? Because Ryan Wingo going to be hard to keep out of it.
Yeah, there's no doubt. I mean, look, Isaiah Bond, Matthew Golden. Matthew Golden's been hampered. He hasn't been 100% this spring. Jonte Cook, Ryan Wingo, DeAndre Moore.
Silas Bolden's going to find a way in that.
Silas Bolden is going to play. It's going to be six guys. It's going to be six. It's Silas Bolden will probably be your starting punt returner. Obviously, Matthew Golden, your kickoff returner. But, yeah, I think it's going to be six guys. And I think Texas has – and I've been saying this, I'm going to remain. It doesn't mean you're necessarily better at one spot or two spots, but I think the overall speed on offense – I think is faster than last year. And I think the speed on the Texas team is faster than last year. And that is impacted by those wide receivers. And I know we're going to go over every position today, but I'll tell you what, guys, that little slip screen to Amari Nyblack at tight end, that joker moves like a wide receiver. That's going to be a play this year that, you know, once Sark runs guys out of that play and throws that slip screen to Nyblack, watch out. But I think it's going to be six at wide receiver, Rod.
To your point about the screen, they ran that tight end screen probably four times. Everybody got a little bit of it. They ran it, I believe, once to Jordan Washington, ran it once to Gunnar Helm, got one of it. Nyblack, I believe, got two of those. Sark loves that tight end screen. Actually, and I'll have to find my notes. It's one of the most explosive plays they have. Last year, it was in terms of the explosive play rate. It has a really high explosive play rate out of those tight end screens. So Sark likes it. Those little leaks, those delayed releases for those tight ends, he loves that kind of stuff. And you saw it in that game, too. Also, in terms of the wide receivers, I would like to do this real quick, this little exercise real quick. We'll get back to some of the questions. Rank the wide receivers for me. Okay. CJ, your favorite. It's a personal preference thing.
Wait, are we talking players or talent? All right.
I would say overall, just your overall, your favorite wide receivers, how you would rank them based on your personal preference.
Yeah.
Okay. Just you. I don't want to get into, well, this guy's better than this guy. No. This is who I think. These are my guys. This is how I would. You know what I mean? That's how I would rank them, either as a scout quarterback, whatever you want to do. It's your personal preference.
Yeah.
CJ.
This is an interesting one because it's not going to line up with what I think we see in the fall. Texas had two wide receivers a year ago play 80% or more of the offensive snaps. I don't think you're going to see that number for any of these wide receivers next year with how deep this group is. Listen, it's interesting. I don't think that you're going to see it with the rotation, the number of guys. I think right now Ryan Wingo is going to be that number one guy at some point in his career. I don't know if it's going to be immediately this season. We know he's going to be that guy, but I might just have that recency, you know, kind of love for what I saw on Saturday. But he's that guy. I don't think the drops are going to be a continual issue for Isaiah Bond. The one in the end zone was the glaring one. Of course, that dot that we saw from Arch Manning there, I don't think that's going to be a significant problem. Of course, the second play of the second half, we saw him go up, you know, to the top shelf basically and haul down a pretty tightly contested catch there. So he's two for me. And then I'm split on Matthew Golden and Jonte Cook for the third spot because I liked what I saw from Jonte Cook. I've been asking to hear more about him. He made a big play last weekend for the first touchdown of the second scrimmage of the spring. And then I thought he had a pretty good day for four receptions for about 80 yards. You know, he looked pretty good, made a tight catch on the sideline over Manny Muhammad as well. That's the big thing for me. If you can consistently get Jonte Cook to extend the hands and make tight catches, he's going to be on the field. He's going to be a good player for Texas. It's all about whether or not he can do that. Milton. Might as well give him a shot now. Circle of trust too.
All right. But, so UT boy.
I like that.
UT boy, this isn't going to be popular, but I'm always real. Wingo's the most talented guy, but if we're talking about playing at Michigan, September 7th, Bond's your number one guy. I liked what I saw from DeAndre Moore yesterday, guys. DeAndre Moore's really, really good football player. I'm going to go early in the season. I actually think it's going to be Bond. I think it'll be actually DeAndre Moore. And then I think we get to Wingo, even though he's the most talented. I think it's early season. Then Golden and Jonte are tied in there. And then Silas Bolden, well, how does he factor in once he gets there? I love DeAndre Moore, guys. I think he's a really good football player now. I think he's faster. What makes him good as a receiver is he's so smooth that you don't think he's that fast, and then he races by your ass.
Yeah.
I think it's going to be like tough that. To keep Silas Bolden off the field. I do.
Oh, it is.
I think it might not be right away because, again, DeAndre Moore has been in the system for 2 years. He had the spring football. He's not arriving in June as Silas Bolden is. So he knows the playbooks. He knows the calls. He knows the adjustments. He might have that leg up there, but by the time SEC play comes around, I don't see a starting wide receiver at the slot spot that's not Silas Bolden.
Here's the biggest compliment I can give the wide receivers this year. Kyle Flood says he's got seven starters, essentially seven players that are good enough to start for him. I think Texas has five guys that are good enough to be starting receivers. I mean, I think that's the reality.
I agree with that.
Everybody better put in work this summer because Ryan Wingo is a special talent, and he's still young, and it's a hard scheme to pick up for a wide receiver, but watch out.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. Because before Bobby made the comparison to Roy Williams, I made it too, and I didn't hear Bobby make it. I didn't. That was separate. That was separate before Bobby, and there's record of it too on the live stream. Before Bobby made it, I made it. I said physically. I said we haven't had a physically gifted wide receiver like this since Roy Williams. And then I heard Bobby say it too, and now I feel better about it. And I think more and more people are going to start, you know, kind of coming to that reality.
Guys, the most impressive play Ryan Wingo made yesterday, again, it's not the bomb and the run after the bomb. It was his first catch where in a short space, he made two or three moves in about 2 yards. For a 6'2", 210-pound guy, that's a little different.
Yep, and think about it. He's better with the ball in his hands than Roy was. Yes. Roy was okay with the ball in his hands. He was a good athlete, but this dude is lethal with the ball in his hands. He can make you miss in a phone booth. He's one of them. So I'll go in terms of the guys that was probably the toughest to cover. Ryan Wingo's the toughest guy to cover out there. There's no doubt. I'm going from a DB perspective. He's the toughest to cover. I would say Jonte Cook's probably the second toughest cover. Isaiah Bond, although Isaiah Bond has the top end speed, I would say he's probably the third toughest cover out there overall, because I think he's definitely a more movement receiver guy. I don't think he accelerates and decelerates as quick as those first two guys. And those are the guys that gave me trouble. The guys that can accelerate and decelerate really quickly, get in and out of those breaks. I think once he hits his top end speed, he's a problem, which is why you want to get him on the move and get him moving, which is why they had that in the red zone. They ran that nod route with him with that beautiful throw by Arch. And you want him moving. You want a movement route with him, catching the ball on the move. And he should have caught that one. Should have been a touchdown. So I think he's the third, probably toughest. Honestly, UT boy, give some props. Thatcher Milton's world. I got to go start watching more Thatcher Milton, man. Hey, he had a hell of a game. I'll throw it out there. I know he's not the one getting love here. I'm not saying he's a tough cover. But, hey, UT boy, you're right about that, man. We got to get Thatcher Milton some love. And I'll go DeAndre Moore is probably my – fourth toughest cover for me as a DB, as a defensive back, because he's a bit smaller. He's a top end speed guy too. I do think he probably gets in and out of his breaks maybe as quick, if not quicker, than some of the other guys too. He's a really precise route runner.
Yes,
I would give that to DeAndre. He's actually probably one of your best route runners overall. Even more so than the other guys who may be a tougher overall matchup. He may be your best kind of refined route runner right now on campus. All right, so Texas, they're just really blessed at wide receiver. They got a ton of talent there. Let's get to some of the other – and we'll get to some of the questions here too. How about this just really quickly, a little palate cleanser from the spring game. Z from the T wants to know, let's hear it about the silent commits, Jerry. What you got for the people? They want to know about the silent commits. This is something new. This wasn't around when I was
No, Rod. Yeah, it wasn't around. I mean, Yeah, I think Texas has three silent commitments right now. When those guys go public, I think one will shortly. I'll say that when the rest of happen, could be 2-3 weeks. But I think Texas had a strong weekend. I think that they've done the two portal guys had very good visits. I think there's a good feeling, a very positive feeling about those guys. But look, I always say this: we're in the NIL era, so you got to let these things play out. But I think Texas did a great job this weekend with the guys, the main guys that were on campus. Not one of those, but I'll just go over recruiting a little bit right now. So I think Bill Norton, great visit, Arizona transfer D lineman. Great visit. I think Jay Toy had a really, really, really good visit as well. He was there with his family. Texas offered his younger brother a beast in 2027 on the D line. On the high school level, I think Riley Pejon and his family had a great visit. They had a really good meeting with Steve Sarkisian. I think Kelshawn Johnson, great visit as well. There were so many guys on campus there. Obviously Elijah Barnes is back. KJ Lacy was back. Amari Winston, Lance Jackson, some commitments there. I reported on texasfootball.com. If you hadn't gone over there, Keelan Russell was on campus, met with Sark this morning, had a great visit. He said it was the best visit he's had so far in the recruiting process. He goes on an official Ole Miss this week. We'll see if Texas extends an offer there. But I thought it was a great weekend overall. I think John Turntine had a tremendous visit. He's a top 2026 tackle in the country. He's got two sisters that were Huston Tillotson. One of those is now transferring to the University of Texas. So I thought Texas had a great weekend overall in recruiting, and things are continuing to move in the right direction.
Getting Nick Brooks on campus as well, Jerry, that was a big one.
Yeah.
Going into the summer with Texas and Georgia now looking like the two teams to beat there.
Yeah. Yeah. Nick Brooks out of Cedar Rapids, John F. Kennedy High School, one of the top offensive linemen in the country. Georgia, I think, is number one. I think Texas vaulted up to number two, similar to what happened with Jamie French a couple of weeks ago, the receiver out of Mandarin. Nick Brooks says he'll be back for an official visit June 14th through 16th. We'll see if Georgia can close that out May 31st through June 2nd. He'll be there for one of their two big visit weekends. Kirby always goes early. Texas goes late. So we'll see if Georgia can close that out. If they can't, he'll visit USC the 7th through 9th, Texas the 14th through 16th. And Iowa, the 21st through 23rd. I've heard Iowa's up against it a little bit on this one right now. Doesn't mean things can't change, but Nick Brooks, tremendous offensive line prospect.
All right, Juan.
Somebody asked about the TCU tackle transfer that was OU. Yeah, CJ and I both have some insight on that. He's still planning. He's still planning to come in Tuesday and Wednesday on a visit to Texas after the OU visit. CJ?
Yeah, no, Oklahoma feels like they did a fine job. They, of course, had another interior defensive line prospect on campus with Jermaine Lowell out of Louisville. So they're similarly in the same spot as Texas. When they need the big bodies inside their trenches on the defensive side of the ball, they're making Dominic Williams a priority. Of course, they would have liked him to have shut things down and at least committed to not taking these extra visits that he has scheduled at the moment. Of course, Texas is on Tuesday and Wednesday of this upcoming week. The plan is still in place for Dominic Williams to take that trip, as well as some following this weekend as well. Right now, Texas is going to be able to put together their best foot forward, in this recruitment. It's going to be a big one in terms of the NIL front. OU put together a good package. I think Texas will be able to meet or exceed in that recruitment as well. So it'll come down to fit, scheme, and of course what package is presented, but Texas will have its shot, and I think they're going to be able to put up a pretty good fight there.
Since we're talking about the D line here, we might as well kind of stick there. We can hit some of these chat questions here. Patrick Smith wants to know: Did Mitchell play? If so, how did he do? I think the defensive line actually was better than I thought. Justin Calhoun here says the D line did not look too bad. January looked promising. Tia Savea looked really good there. It looked very good. I mean, overall, what are you guys' thoughts? And we're talking about Texas, of course, targeting defensive tackles, interior D linemen in the transfer portal. What are your thoughts about the overall D line? We'll get to the edges here, because it's almost like Sark considers the edges separate from the defensive line. Because yeah. Remember, he talked about how they need to get more bodies on the D line, but was very complimentary of how they're going to have an edge rush this year. But let's talk about the defensive line, and then we'll work our way to the edges as well. Start with the interior. What did you guys think? I thought the rush defense actually was better than I projected they would be. Better than I predicted they would be in the spring game.
Yeah, especially considering Alfred Collins didn't play a lot, right? But I thought TSFA, look, here's what we can all – Rod, you played with guys like this. He didn't get a lot of fanfare through spring practice. But in the game, he was really good. That's a guy with a lot of experience, right? I mean, he was one of the anchors on a 10-win Arizona team that was really good defensively under Johnny Nansen last year. Bill Norton was played next to him on that. But Savea played really well yesterday. I thought Aaron Bryant had his moments as well. But I Savea probably caught my eye more than anybody else on the interior defensive line yesterday. Considering Alfred Collins didn't play a lot, I think Dre Bledsoe's, you know, he'll always flash a little bit. But I thought, I thought Savea was the best player in the game yesterday for Texas.
I agree. I actually wanted to shout out Sadir Mitchell because I thought he stood out a few times as well. Of course, more so in the run lane when he can clog that trench area than in the passing game. He still has to work on the ability to get up the field after the passer in that regard. But for a guy that didn't start out spring very hot, I thought he turned it around over the last week or two. I was told the second scrimmage, he actually looked like he was really, really putting a strain on the opposing offensive line. I think that carried over a little bit to the spring game whenever he was able to clog some running lanes there. Good day for him. I was encouraged. Of course, Texas still needs bodies. Sarkisian mentioned it in his press conference. You know, it's a math issue. We just don't have the depth that we need to go six or seven deep at the position if we're going to play 13, 14, or 15 games with four of them coming in the heat in September in Austin early in the season. You're going to have those bodies right now. Texas just doesn't have them. And then the spring game when Alfred Collins was on the pitch count and Vernon Broughton wasn't available, then you really got to see why Texas is needing those bodies on the interior.
Hey, Rod, Alex January also looked really good for a freshman, by the way.
He did.
What did you think, Rod? Who did you notice on your second watch?
No, I thought Alex January looked really good, too. I'm with you on that. But I'm with you. I was really impressed with Savea. I thought Sadir Mitchell actually played pretty well in the scrimmage. I thought the rush defense overall actually was a lot more impressive than I thought it would be. And, you know, maybe that means the Texas rushing offense right now just hadn't hit its groove yet. But I thought the rush defense was better than I thought. So maybe schematically, it was more to the rush defense last year than just obviously Devondre Sweat and Byron Murphy. That remains to be seen. But I still think, and this is what I think we can get to, Brandon Huey says, Colton Vasek made a statement. I totally agree with that. I know, CJ, I saw you talk about him being your defensive MVP of the spring game, if you will. There's no doubt we came into this matchup talking about how deep they were on the edges with Baron Sorrell, with Ethan Burke, made a play at the beginning of the game. I mean, it was his tip pass, ended up being intercepted by Alfred Collins, returned for a touchdown. I don't know whether you're talking about Trey Moore, we didn't see much of, but we know he's going to be an impact player for Texas. But now you can add, I think, Colton Gossick to that mix. A young Zena Emiozulu looked pretty good out there at the defensive end on the edge position. Texas edges this year are going to be something to be reckoned with, and they're actually deeper now, guys, than we initially thought after watching Colton Bossick.
Yeah, no, it was just great to see Colton 100% healthy back on the field. This is why Oklahoma went so far into their investments to get him to commit to Oklahoma at the point out of Westlake. And Texas had to fight and claw to get him back into the Texas fold. Certainly it helped having Arch and staying close to home. That helped. But for me, Colton Vasek in high school was as bendy, as twitchy, and as lengthy as the prototypical edge rusher that you would have liked. You know, Sarkisian mentioned a guy like Zena Umiozulu was built in a lab when it comes to the physique of a defensive edge spot, player at that spot. Colton Vasek is very similar. You know, he's 6'5", pushing 6'6". He has very lengthy arms, but it's the bend and the athleticism. I know going back to Westlake, him and Ethan Burke on the same offense or defensive line, God help any quarterbacks that they played that year, because that wasn't very fun, I'm sure, to have both of them screaming off the edges. But Burke got a lot of the hype and the headlines because he was a converted lacrosse player. He was committed elsewhere to play Division I lacrosse. Big-time athlete. And then you go and you look at Colton Vasek and you think, okay, this guy can bend, he can move, he can do all of this just as well, if not better. Where's the hype coming from him? And to see him really take that leap his senior year and become one of the best one of the best trench players in all of the state of Texas, I thought was very encouraging. Now that he's 100% healthy, he's going to be a big player for Texas. And in that room that we've mentioned with Trey Moore, Colin Simmons, Burke, and Sorrell, where else can you find ways to get on the field? Well, it's by making negative plays in the backfield, and he made four or five of them this weekend. I thought it was a really encouraging showcase, an opportunity for him to break out really on a big stage in front of a lot of fans who have yet to see him really play up to that standard.
I about thought Finkley played well yesterday too, Rod. And I'll tell you what, Akana flashes enough that if you can keep adding weight and strength in, because he is a designated pass rush specialist, man. He has that little outside in, and he'll get you with it. He's quick. He's a quick kid. He's a kid who can rush the passer, but Colin Simmons really came on as the game moved along. He was really putting offensive tackles on their skates a little bit in the second half of that game, Rod.
Yeah. I mean, you can tell, man, his first step, the BGL, it's different. It looks different. Him coming off that edge. I'm with you. I think now, I mean, you add him as a prodigy to the mix. Are we talking about what, six deep now? On the edge, potentially. Yeah. I mean, it's been a long time since Texas has been that deep at the edge position, at the edge defender position. All right, let's get to these because we got a bunch of these piling up about the secondary. Juan, we'll start with his. Rod and Jerry, do you think Terry Joseph is a good secondary coach development-wise or just a great recruiter? Thoughts? This is the year. I will say this is a huge year. Because remember, and I appreciate the super chat, brother. Thank you very much. I'm gonna say they neglected, but I will say in terms of roster construction, the secondary is one of the last places they addressed on the roster. It really was with Derek Williams, that addition to the mix, adding the Malik Muhammad to the mix, Makuba in the transfer portal. They added what, five DBs in this recruiting class. That was the most DBs they've had in any of the recruiting class since Sark's been here. So they really focused on getting their types of players, in the secondary, whether physically, the guys who have the skill set that they covet, which I think are just guys who can cover, right, coverage specialists overall, versatility in the skill set. So you won't see that come to fruition, but the guys who have been there now have been in the system. They know the system. They know the technique and the fundamentals. If this year the secondary does not take the leap, and I'm on record, I am on the record, and I know there are people here in the chat talking about it. Yeah, I am on the record saying the secondary is the only position that hasn't improved. Marshall, thank you very much. Marshall says, Rod said DBs are the only position group we haven't seen improvement with. Well, I think it's true. I'm telling you, I truly believe that. And I think I predicted this year would be the year we finally saw the secondary improve. Based on what I saw in the spring game, that was not the case. So I'm not going to go, full on scorched earth and freak out, because I think there's time to improve what, the things that obviously were exposed in the spring game. But the things that were exposed were some of the same issues they had last season. I will say that. Like, there's not something new that popped up. These are some of the same issues. Communication issues in the secondary, inside leverage issues in the secondary, guys with bad eyes not being able to pass off receivers in coverage. So these are not new issues, and Sark knows they are not new issues either. So, I will admit this year, if the secondary doesn't take a step, you probably can. I think it could be considered an indictment on the coaches because they've been here a while, and those are veteran guys in the secondary now. I know it's a young Malik Muhammad. I know it's a young, you got a young Derek Williams, but they still have been starters now. And Terrence Brooks is not, a young guy. He's been in the secondary a long time. Jadae Barron is going to improve it. He didn't play, and that's understandable because they want him to be totally healthy, but he's going to make a difference. Makuba's going to make a huge difference. I like the way he moves in the secondary. You can tell he diagnoses plays really well. Malik Muhammad called. He said Malik Muhammad described him as someone who's, even when you're wrong, he can make you right. That's describing a veteran player who knows how to erase mistakes in the secondary from other guys. So I like the players in the secondary, but as a cohesive unit, they don't win enough. They don't win enough. They got to start winning more, getting their hands on more footballs, forced incompletions or interceptions. They just they got a lot of great players, but the sum of its parts, Jerry, is something off there.
Yeah, yeah. We've had a couple of questions about Cormani McClain, who's in the portal from Colorado, and I'm not trying to kill the kid, but I'm just saying I'm going to say this. I said the same thing about Bear Alexander when there was talk that he was going to jump in the portal. You know, if you don't want to stick around and be developed by the guy that was handpicked by Aaron Donald to coach him for 12 years in the NFL or whatever it was, I kind of question you. I mean, Cormani McClain, if, you know, Deion Sanders pretty good at coaching corners and developing corners. If you don't want any part of that, I'm not sure I want any part of you guys. I'm just saying that. Hey, by the way, I need to tell everybody about Joe Brown before our next question, Rod B. Our sponsor tonight is Joe Brown. A special thanks to our newest sponsor, Joe Brown, your veteran mortgage professional. Joe's been providing mortgages in Austin and around Texas for more than 3 decades. That's right. Good old Bobby Burton. When I say old, I mean it, 54. Joe Brown, first mortgage for Bobby Burton back in the day. In fact, he was the mortgage broker for Bobby Burton's first ever home purchase more than 25 years ago. Joe's also a proud Navy veteran and a devout Longhorn fan. Give him a call at 512-663-4744. If you're looking for a mortgage, that's 512-663-4744.
All right. Thank you very much for that, Jay. We appreciate it. One more super chat. Actually, not one more. We got a couple more. But Justin here wants to know, what position group and or players are you keeping an eye on most from now until, I'm assuming, the start of the season, at the end of training camp, 831? He said, do we think the DB room will improve from last year? I do think it will improve. I'm not freaking out just yet, but I will say I don't know if it's going to be the strength that I assumed it would be. I thought it would be a strength. I don't know if it's a strength, but they can't be. They have to improve on what they did last year. I'm almost certain they will. Will they be a strength is a different discussion. But what do you guys think? Justin's question, what position group or players are you keeping an eye on the most in that time span? Is it just interior D-line?
To me, it's the interior defensive line over the secondary, still because I think that there's still a gap of top-end talent. I think you know what you have in Malik Muhammad. You know what you have in Derek Williams. Andrew Makuba has been a proven guy over the past 3 years. Jahdae Barron's been one of your best players defensively over the last two. And Jalen Gilbo has been a guy that's come on very well in the spring session as well. Terrence Brooks might be the biggest question mark, and he didn't have a great game in the spring game on Saturday. But again, if you go back to last year's numbers, he was your best cover corner by a pretty good margin. He only allowed 44% completion against him a year ago. And I know there's been that conversation about whether or not he's best fit for the boundary or the field, but keeping him on the field is the number one piece for the Longhorns. That cornerback group is not super deep. And because of that, you're going to have to see guys like Terrence Brooks and Gavin Holmes continue to take that step up in their game. That's going to be huge for Texas, who likes to rotate in that secondary in the middle of the season. So interior defensive line still gets the nod for who needs to take the biggest step, where the eyes are going to be before the season begins. But I'm not entirely off the train with this secondary unit at the moment.
Interesting question. I think it kind of goes in hand with who could jump in the portal from Texas here in the next 8 days, right? We're down to the portal closes April 30th. Is there some attrition that could pop up that maybe isn't being talked about as much? Could a linebacker jump in? Could something like that happen? Will Texas add a punter out of the portal? That's something I'm watching. So, but to me, it would become a bit of a depth issue if one or two guys unexpectedly to position jump in the portal that maybe aren't being talked about. I do think Texas will still have 4 or 5 more guys jump in the portal before April 30th. That I'll be surprised if it's not that number. So we'll see somebody. By the way, Isaac Darden, Jordan Washington's greatness is loading. He actually had the catch of the game yesterday, guys.
Yep.
Climb the ladder. That one.
Climb the ladder.
Yep. Holding on to the nice rock step, too, after getting flipped upside down. That was impressive.
He looked like he was on an AAU basketball court grabbing a rebound, contested rebound. He's done it a lot. He just did it with a big basketball. Now he's doing it with a helmet on. Hell of a catch.
Yep. No, I agree with you on that. It was he looked good. I mean, I feel better about the tight ends than I did prior to the spring game. I will say that. And not that I was worried about them, but I feel better about that group overall now after watching them in the spring game. And even with the young buck, Jordan Washington, man, he looks really good. Here's an interesting conversation starter. This comes from Sandman23. He wants to know, in what way is Baxter better than Blue? I'll wait. .. I think it's a preference thing. I think it's all about preference. And Sark wants, he also, Sark likes the compliment of having one guy with a different skill set. A different skill set than Blue. I think they have different skill sets. So it's all about the preference and what you want. But if you want to emphasize the passing game, and I think Blue's going to be more the guy for you because of what he can do in a passing game. They ran that Texas route, basically, with that kind of anger rod in the backfield. They ran it twice. Once was Savion Red. Once was a touchdown to Jaden Blue. Hell, man, they got like 50 yards, I believe, combined out of those two plays, off of that one play. But I think though they want to get some kind of vertical routes, or obviously the wheel route. He runs really well down the field. But I've been hearing even in practice, they're doing some funkier things with Jaden Blue, where they get him in the slot and get him downfield on some routes. I think that's what they want to do. So for Baxter, I don't know if you're going to have him doing the variety of things you'll have a Jaden Blue doing. So I do think it's more of a preference, but I don't know. It all depends on what you prefer as a coach, I guess.
Yeah, look, I think it's a fun conversation, but I think the strength is that both of those guys are there. I mean, look, Cedric Baxter, he looked good yesterday, physical. Yep. I mean, he ran through multiple teammates. But next time, don't grab his leg and hold on to it. Guys get hurt that way, by the way. That was kind of, but after you get run over, just take it. Don't grab a guy's leg and pull on it after that. That's your teammate, man. Baxter ran tough yesterday. He's a physical player, catches the ball. What I think Texas has is multiple running backs that can catch the ball out of the backfield. Like you were talking about, Rod, Jaden Blue, and I said this when he was recruited, he has as good a hand as you'll see on a running back. I mean, he's got really good hands. I mean, natural, soft hands. He catches the ball well in traffic. A really good player. Obviously, when Texas is going to run the football between the tackles, they're not going to ask Jaden Blue to do that in a lot of carries. That's not what they're going to ask him to do. Guys have different strengths. I don't want to see square peg round hole with any of these guys, man. I want to see him used to maximize their talents. And if they maximize their talents as a room and as a group, I mean, Trey Weiser is a really good slasher as well. Yeah. I mean, if they just and Sark will do this, if they'll maximize all their skill set, who cares? I mean, it's about winning football games.
Yeah, to me, CJ Baxter, being able to use him inside the tackles is still going to be where you see his bread and butter. I thought yesterday was probably the best that we've seen him in terms of just brushing off contact. You know, that big play on the check down by the sideline where he had three guys, you know, basically brush right off of his shoulders, and he ended up trucking another into the sideline. That was very impressive to me. We've not seen that at least consistently his freshman campaign. I think that bruising running back that we've seen with a Roshon Johnson, a Jonathan Brooks to an extent, not necessarily his overall strength, but it certainly plays to his style of running more so than it does a Jaden Blue, which to your point, Jerry, that complementary factor, tremendous, especially when you can add a guy like Trey Weisner who can make plays, in that slot, that Keelan role that we saw a year ago. I think that room as a whole covers a lot of area in terms of the strengths that you expect to see from the running back group, as well as, you know, individually what they bring to the table.
A couple of recruiting questions before we get back to the spring game here. E-Kim wants to know, Jerry, has East Texas taken over Houston currently as a more fertile recruiting area? Oh, man. Don't tell me that's the case.
No. I think he was – I think we wanted to see your reaction, Rod.
I was going to say, what? Come on, man.
East Texas will have some swings. They may have a couple of down years, then a couple of up years, right? I mean, a lot of people have moved more closer to Dallas, closer to Houston. That's just kind of the way it goes. But I think East Texas has high-end talent. And this class is really good. I mean, look, Lance Jackson's up in Texarkana. If he hadn't gone to the Under Armour camp in Houston, people would probably he'd still be a little underappreciated. Ricky Stewart, really talented. East Texas, this class, the 26 class, I think are really good in East Texas. They had a couple of down classes as well, but really good talent out there. But no, Houston's really good in 25. And I think 26 is going to be strong as well. Maybe still not to the level of Dallas, who I think has more large humans to go with the speed, but Houston's got one of their better offensive line groups they've had in recent years in the city. But Houston's still on top of East Texas for sure.
Thank you very much, Jeff. I also feel insulted if that wasn't the case. Burnt orange horn for you, CJ. So, CJ, what is your take of Lacy after your interview with him, with KJ Lacy, the quarterback, I'm assuming?
Oh, man, he loved what he saw from the quarterbacks. And how could you not? You know, you go and you see two backup quarterbacks and a walk-on fourth-string quarterback lead touchdown drives throughout the entire day. KJ Lacy told me essentially that's why he liked Sarkisian's offense. You know, not only is he always going to be surrounded by playmakers, but he's going to be put in situations to put points on the board and be developed. Of course, what stood out to him is Trey Owens has only been on campus for about 3 or 4 months, and he had the day that he had completing close to 70% of his passes and eclipsing 200 passing yards. That stands out to young quarterbacks. To see those steps on the field that early, KJ Lacy was a big fan. And, Jerry, I wanted to get your thoughts on this because Keelan Russell was on campus today, and he left without an offer. That, to me, is an indication of how this Texas staff is evaluating, or at least looking at this quarterback group at the moment. They, of course, want one quarterback. KJ Lacy, Keelan Russell, not having an offer extended just yet tells me that, hey, the chips are still in the basket right now with KJ Lacy.
Yeah, I thought what was interesting was there had been a lot of talk, was Texas going to try to take a two quarterback class? And we've been consistent with that, saying, one, it's just not going to happen. But I just don't see Texas. I don't see Sark doing that, guys. I just don't. He wants to get win. He told us to Keelan Russell, they plan to take one quarterback, a guy that they can develop at that position. I think the key here in recruiting a quarterback in this class is who's going to have patience and understand process. Because I think the one thing that you got to be careful of if you're a quarterback, and there's only two, I think, in the picture, and that's KJ Lacy, who's committed, and there's Keelan Russell, is who balks at the process. If Arch Manning's willing to sit 2 years, why aren't you? The Mannings are pretty good at this stuff.
Right.
They work on the timeline that Sark likes quarterbacks and development to work on. And if Manning's okay with it, then if you aren't, are you going to buy into the process? I think that is the interesting thing. I think Texas will go out and watch Keelan in May. A.J. Milwee will go see all the top 25, the top 26 quarterbacks. And, of course, he'll go watch Keelan throw the football. But what I'm watching for with quarterback recruiting in 25, does anybody balk at process? If you balk at process, that's where the game changes, in my opinion.
Good stuff there. All right. A couple of other questions here coming off of the chat. Someone here, Kelly at Horns Up, said too much riding on this season to wait and see if the secondary improves. Sark needs to take proactive steps. They're not the only one. We have another person in the chat here who wonders if the Longhorns will pursue cornerbacks. Syracuse Horn, are we going to look for a portal cornerback? I don't think that's happening, but Jerry, they do have options. Is that a possibility that they could look for added help in the secondary?
Yeah, nothing we've heard yet, right? I mean, I know obviously we talked about Cormani McClain. He put Texas on a list. I'm not sure I'd go there, honestly. If you don't, I mean, if Deion ain't good enough, then who's good enough? I mean, to me, I mean, that's just a little crazy to me. Look, there's some comments out there about his high school coach from his high school coach that were interesting. And I'm not trying to crush the kid. I mean, go be great, but you got to go be great. You got to want to go be great and develop. So I don't see anything right now. We'll see if that changes. Looks, Texas has Santana Wilson, another technician, very similar to Manny Muhammad, is not an early enrollee. He's coming in June, Rod. I know you like Santana Wilson. He's a technician like Manny Muhammad is, so – they do have one more corner on the way. I think that's kind of been – I know Coach Shipley's mentioned this, Rod. That's kind of been his question this spring is who's going to be that fourth corner? I don't know if you like what you saw from Warren Roberson yesterday, if you saw anything out of him, Wardell Mack, Kobe Black, but who's going to step up and be that fourth corner? Because there are injuries. Ryan Watts missed time last year, so then your four becomes your three. Is it Jahdae Barron? Is it one of the younger guys?
It's Jahdae. It's Jahdae. Jahdae's going to be the fourth corner because they like what they saw from Jalen Gilbo, and I think Jalen Gilbo looked pretty good too. And if they like what they saw from him from Star, then that's why they're cross-training a lot of guys. I think ultimately if they have injuries or they have a dire situation, they just throw Jahdae Barron out there, put Jalen Gilbo in the star position. They feel real good about it.
Hey, Rod, I want to ask you.
They still got Makuba. They still got Makuba that can also play star if need be. And then, and they could play more, obviously, other guys at safety. So they do have some options if, you know, it comes to that.
Rod, I want to ask you this one. Did Jelani McDonald flash at all for you? He had the bad run fit, but outside of that, what did you think?
I liked him. I thought Jelani McDonald actually played pretty well. I thought some of the younger safeties that I thought made a lot of mistakes and mental errors, angles to the football, stuff like that. But I thought some of the veteran safeties actually played pretty well. And I thought Jelani McDonald, he solidified himself. He probably is going to end up being the fourth safety in that rotation with Derek Williams, with Michael Taft, Makuba, and I believe he's going to be that fourth safety for him. I like his versatility. I like his length, number one. I mean, I like his frame. He's just he's long. He's rangy. I will see if, you know, I think run fits any angles. Running the alley is going to be a problem for him. But I think in coverage, I think he actually may be an asset for you potentially in coverage just because of how long he is matching up with guys.
Background and playing cornerback as well.
I'm going to make one more read for Joe Brown real quick. So we get this one in. Our newest sponsor, Joe Brown, your veteran mortgage professional. Joe has been providing mortgages in Austin and around the state of Texas for more than 3 decades. In fact, he was the first mortgage broker for Bobby Burton's first ever home purchase more than 25 years ago in Austin. Joe's also a proud Navy veteran and a devout Texas Longhorn fan. Give him a call at 512-663-4744 if you're looking for a mortgage. Again, that's 512-663-4744. Thank you very much to Joe Brown, veteran mortgage broker, for sponsoring the Sunday Night Longhorn live stream.
Thank you, Joe Brown. We appreciate your support. Freshwater Cajun, not sure if this was asked, was there more sacks and pressures this year during the spring game versus last year? Almost same O-line. Should it be good proxy for D-line pressure improvement?
Yes.
That's a great question. You guys thought there was more pressure, more sacks. Sark was doing a good job, I thought, of, you know, basically overruling plays and calling it a sack. I didn't see any official stats about it because everybody cares about offense and not defense. But I thought there may have been more called there sacks in this game.
I thought there were, but I didn't think many of them came against that first unit. You know, I thought it was a clean day for Arch Manning, also in the sense that he – you know, moved around the pocket very well in that sense. But Colton Vosick had a pair. I thought Celia Akana had one. Colin Simmons recorded a sack as well. And funny enough, talking about cornerbacks, Wardell Mack off of a corner blitz got him one as well. So there were a number of times where I thought plays were called dead at the right time or should have been called dead because of pressure at the quarterback. Of course, they're not live in spring games, but there were a number of sacks, and I was encouraged by the amount of pressure coming off of the edges, especially when a guy like Trey Moore, who you expect to be probably your best edge guy, not on the field. It was a good day in the sense of pressure on the quarterbacks to me. I thought there were a really, really solid amount of sacks there.
I'm going to reference one thing. Last year we talked, Rod, we talked about this, how confident Steve Sarkisian was before the season in his team, right? Sarkisian and CJ was there in the post-game pro-spring game press conference said, our edge pass rush is real. I think we need to bypass the spring game and take his word for it, that he's not just throwing that out there for the hell of it. He's not like that. Trey Moore didn't even play much. You saw Colin Simmons flash. Baron Sorrell didn't play a lot. You know what Ethan Burke did last year, where he could provide with that quickness-length combination. You saw Colton Vasek. Cecilia Khan has got some edge quickness. I mean, I'm taking Sark's word for this one. He says our edge pass rush is real. Rod, I don't think he just threw that out for the hell of it.
Sark doesn't do that. Sark doesn't like to really brag about how good stuff is. When he does give you that, I remember him talking about Rojo and how good his running backs were when he first got to. He's like, man, them running backs are pretty damn good. When Sark starts bragging about something, I think that means that group's going to be really, really good. Good stuff there. All right, a couple of super chats, and then we'll go kind of rapid fire and hit as many of these questions, comments as we can. Freelance Society wants to know, will Texas ever play 3 high safeties in the SEC? Could that help with their issue with the vertical threat since they have a big issue? Yeah, Texas doesn't – I remember like one or two snaps where I think Texas ended up, it even looked like it was a three high look for them. But Texas doesn't do it. That's not really what they do at all. And Texas will play some teams that could use the three high, just because I would say in recent history, it has matched up well with the Sark offense. But last season, I'm not going to say Sark solved the three high safety defense, but he found his formula. He found his remedy for it. He found, you know, what worked for him and his offense up against the three high, which essentially to expose the three high, you want extreme formations and personnel groupings. That's why he started going with a lot of 3-by-1 sets, power personnel groupings, forced the three high out of its disguise. And he did a really good job with that last season. And by the way, he faced it more, I would say half the games that Texas played, they faced the three high defense last season. And because teams saw what I saw and they started saying, hey, man, it matches up well with his offenses and his offenses are less effective versus these three high schemes. But that wasn't necessarily the case last season. So I think Sark went to work. I think he went back to the drawing board in the offseason to figure it out because he knew in the Big 12 he was going to face it so much. And he did. He faced it a lot. But he also, I think, did a great job in able to find out ways, solutions to the three high, three down safe. But again, in the big, I would say in the SEC, I've seen Georgia run it. Georgia's run it. So if Georgia run it, then I think everybody will try to run it. That they don't specialize in. The Big 12 had teams that specialized in it. It was their identity defensively. You had like four teams. Hell, the grandfather of it, really the founding father of it, John Haycock, he was in the Big 12. I mean, yep. It was so he had so many teams that specialized in it. You won't have that in the SEC, but everybody will have it in their playbook, I'm assuming, at least as a change of pace.
Especially in the week leading up to Texas when they know that it's been efficient in years past against Sarkisian. You mentioned, Rod, that he certainly found ways to find better success, but at the same time, it's not the same offense that you see against a look that's not three high. I actually thought Texas played a pretty solid amount of single high three cover three. So that was prevalent on the spring game as well. Similar kind of concept, but different look. We'll see if that does translate over, if PK does add that to his bag a little bit for the fall.
I wonder if that's a Johnny Nansen influence too, because they didn't play as much cover three last year, but Arizona loved to play a lot of cover three. So I wonder if that's more of a Nansen influence there, him coming in and playing some more cover three, as opposed to so much match quarters, which they played, that Gary Patterson influence. Aloha Traveler here. I'm envious. I'm always jealous. If Owen starts after Arch, might be better for Texas to grab Russell and develop him over Lacey, who might bolt if he sits for a year or two. Landing the best DVille quarterback ever will keep that pipeline. Man, that's your first. These are first world problems at quarterback. Texas is discussing now. What are your thoughts? about that hypothetical there, Jerry?
I think whoever Texas signs in this class is looking at 2 years of development. I think that's just a reality. And that doesn't mean you're going to be the starter. That means you develop and you go battle Trey Owens for the job, right? I mean, that's what's going to happen. That's just the reality for whichever quarterback in the 25 class. And that kind of goes back to what I said earlier. I think whoever blinks at that is what's going the thing to watch in quarterback recruitment. I'm not saying either one of those guys are, but if one of them does, I think that changes the course of quarterback recruiting.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. Go ahead, CJ.
No, I'm right there in the same thing. Listen, I thought Texas, probably had that similar mindset locking up Jaquinin Jackson back in the day. Is it going to be the same case? How do you know that, you know, after a year or two of sitting, the same situation with Keelan Russell isn't applicable for KJ Lacy? You know, these guys want to play football. It's not always a guarantee that that's going to be the case and it's going to be beneficial across the board because of where he comes out of Duncanville in this instance. For me, I think you take the best player, the best fit, and clearly right now Texas having not extended an offer to Keelan Russell at the moment speaks a lot in terms, at least for me, where they sit and where they see this quarterback class at the moment.
And one thing to remember on KJ Lacy, Sark, he can offer a lot of guys. I mean, he went to Saraland High to battle out on Auburn and Alabama and Ole Miss for KJ Lacy. Texas is a big KJ Lacy fan.
Yeah.
Nice. Yeah. You can never have too many quarterbacks, man. You just got to stockpile them. You can't control what's going to happen after you bring them in. Just bring as many of them as you can. Doug here says, not sold on Terrence Brooks. Muhammad is a good technician type corner. I think Terrence Brooks just had an off. I mean, he just had an off spring game. Terrence Brooks is a better player than that. I mean, that was a simple switch release that he missed there. I think Terrence Brooks is a better player than that. I think Gavin Holmes is a better player than what he showed in the spring game. I think the secondary just had an off game. There's no doubt Malik Muhammad is the star of that group. Even on that Jonte Cook third down they gave up early. Remember the throw by Quinn Ewers? It was like the deep kind of comeback curl they ran. Oh, man, he did a speed turn. Go watch his speed turn. He turns inside, and then he does a speed turn to get right back to Jonte Cook on that play. It was marvelous quick technique. It really was. Go watch it. Even when he got somebody caught the pass on him, coaches are going to be really complimentary of his technique on that play that kept him close. Malik Muhammad is a star. There's no doubt about that. Here's another one here. It says Rick says, is there a concern with Cam Williams in pass pro? He had a tough time with Ethan Burke. Was that the maybe it might be an RPO that they batted down, right? That was an RPO pass early on.
Yeah,
that Ethan Burke got his hands on. I won because there were a couple of passes, maybe two or three, that were batted down. Remember, that's what Washington did a good job of against Texas that nobody had done all season long. Nobody had figured, and they got their hands on with like 3-4 passes early on, batted them down, and they were all RPO throws from Texas. I wonder if Texas defense now, they're telling the guys, just get your hands up, RPO throws. You got a chance to at least bat a ball in a window. What are your thoughts about the pass protection of Cam Williams, potentially?
I was actually encouraged from what I saw with the tandem of DJ Campbell and Cam Williams. I thought that they did a good job working together in terms of passing guys off when there's a twist and a stunt. That was a big question mark is, of course, can DJ Campbell keep his eyes up and find guys that are twisting and stunting into his gap? And how will he be able to communicate with a guy like Cam Williams, who's brand new for him after a year with Christian Jones, a veteran, a guy that's been around the block a number of times? To me, I didn't necessarily think it was a bad day for Cam Williams. Again, just getting those live reps for him are going to be very big. He's only played a one true game against an actual opponent as a Texas Longhorn. Getting him these live reps are going to continue to help him in his development going against big-time SEC competition this fall. Of course, Texas, we've talked about it. The edge pressure has been one of the biggest takeaways from the spring. And right now we've talked about the defense backs and the wide receivers making each other better. Cam Williams going up against guys like Trey Moore, Colin Simmons, Ethan Burke. That's only going to help him, get ready for the fall. I didn't think it was a bad day at all on Saturday for him.
Yeah. All right. Good stuff. Kyle here wants to know, how is Sark going to make everyone happy? Too many weapons. No such thing, Kyle. No such thing.
look,
such thing as too many weapons. They got a lot of weapons.
Yeah. Look, this is the toughest job for college coaches once you start to have success, especially playoff success, right? It changes expectations. The next group of kids that you recruit come in that maybe aren't as process oriented, but more saw the results. So I think the great thing about being a blue blood program in today's day and age of college football, I've said this before, I'm going to keep harping on this, is because you can bring in this level of high school talent and this level of portal talent, you get to see who's really bought into your process. Because here's the reality. If guys aren't bought into the process and they're just out for the instant gratification, then you just move on from those guys and go recruit another really talented player. So that doesn't answer the question directly, but it will come up at some point. There's going to be somebody sulk on the sidelines this year. All right. I mean, Rod, it's part of football, right? You watched it for years from the sideline. Somebody's going to make some big plays early in the season, and the other guy's not going to be on the field as much, and coaches are going to be seeing how that guy handles it, right? But you can never have too many weapons. Totally agree with Rod. I think, as Rod calls it, the circle of trust is going to expand this year, which will be interesting because I think Texas is going to run more two-back sets as well. So something's going to have to give a little bit there. But I think, look, Sark was a psychology major, so I'll trust him to handle it.
Hey, Jerry, real Trusting quick, I want to get your thoughts. I know we're talking about the team, but a little bit of recruiting news. 2027 Denton Guyard athlete Zane Rowe actually just committed to Oklahoma, was on campus at Texas earlier this month, has been around the block a number of times, been on campus plenty. Long way to go on that one. I think this is one that Texas will certainly find ways to get back involved with. I'd be very surprised if this recruitment shut down anytime soon. Of course, 2027 is a long ways away, and Zane Rowe is going to be a guy with a number of big-time suitors coming after him over the next 2 years.
Yeah, interesting. It's a little early, early to say.
Good stuff there, CJ. All right, guys, getting ready to wrap it up. Any closing statements here? I'll just say this. I know people are freaking out about the secondary, Longhorn fans. Freaking out about the secondary. Go ahead, Jerry. Go ahead.
We've had more people ask about Cormani McClain at corner. That's popular. I'm just going to stand by it. I mean, look, if you I'm not sure I'd go there. And not that he's not a very talented player. But I'm not sure that's your answer right now. He needs development, and he's going to need time. I know he was highly ranked out of high school, but look, he pretty much said Deion's not good enough for me. So the best that's ever done it isn't good enough for you. You might want to kind of reconsider what you're thinking about this whole deal in football and development. That's what I would say.
On the topic of the secondary, Aaron Rodgers said it best, Rod, just relax. I think it'll be fine. I really do.
I'll say this. The one thing that can really help a secondary out is pressure and pass rush. And I think Texas will have a better edge pressure and edge pass rush this season. And you do have a corner you can depend on in Malik Muhammad. I think he's just going to get better. You add Jahdae Barron to the mix as a cohesive unit. I do think they'll improve. But they got some steps. I mean, there's no doubt about it. That group's they got a ways to go based on what we saw. But based on what we saw, is that the only thing that we're left complaining about after the spring game? Is there any other? Is that it? Is that the only thing? We got anything else we're complaining about after the spring game other than the secondary and pass defense?
If you want to get really nitpicky, Rod, maybe the interior run game. But hey, if that's the big issue on the defensive side of the ball, then it's them showing that they're capable of more than we thought, I think.
These are first world problems we're talking about. So I think the secondary bill, because I do think schematically there are ways to help the secondary, which you did not witness in the spring game and you're not going to witness. And I do think PK understands that. And being aggressive blitzing is a big part of that too, just coming after the opposing quarterback, not giving them time back there. Matter of fact, the first incompletion by Arch, they came after him because they got tired of Arch just sitting back there being efficient, picking them apart. So I think that's better. UT boy, hey, thank you for the super chat. Jonte is in the circle. Yes, the circle is getting bigger too, baby. That circle of trust, it keeps growing every day. It's growing every day. All right, guys, closing comments before we get out of here.
Hey, we have over 6,000 people on tonight. Thank you so much for the support, whether that's YouTube, Twitter, what have you. That's a massive number, 6,135. It keeps going up, man. Thank you very much. If you like what we're doing here at On Texas Football YouTube, ontexasfootball.com. Now's the time to sign up to be an OG of OTF just for $39.95. Save $20 on that annual subscription. Hundreds and hundreds have already jumped into it. We talk on the message boards. We'll have more recruiting information on there, more team information. So thank you so much. 6,165. It keeps going up. Thank you so much for your support, guys. We love doing it. When we're low energy, y'all help us bring the energy. So Texas fans, hey, if you're SEC fans, there's been some Michigan fans. Thank you all for joining in. We love talking ball with you. We love talking shop, recruiting ball, just having a good time.
Yeah, no doubt about it. CJ, last closing comments for you, buddy. Anything for the folks out there before you get out of here?
Yeah, at the end of the day, it was a fun spring game. It was a great environment, great, afternoon. And I'm glad the rain held off. It was a day of dry football when we were expecting it to get a little wet, a little nasty out there. Only thing that was nasty was the quarterback. So for that reason, Texas is going to be in really good hands and really good arms moving forward. And I cannot wait for the future of this program because, to have a guy like Arch Manning as your number two and a guy like Trey Owens who showed so much promise as your number three, it only speaks about the future of this program, which we already believe to be taking the right steps. So I'm very encouraged following the spring. I thought it was very successful.
Yeah, one of the most anticipated spring games in the last 15 years. And it's hard to live up to the hype It actually did live up to the hype. That's crazy. And Arch Manning lived up to the hype. I don't know how you do that. That's tough to do. So hopefully this season, guys, is all about them living up to the hype. Hey, Josh, if you want a Robbie autograph anytime, it ain't worth much. But, hey, anytime you want it, I'll give it to you, brother. Anytime. I appreciate the support. Appreciate all the love. And for my man TJ Vogel, for my man Jerry Hamilton, and Matthew behind the scenes. Matthew is always working hard for me. Does an amazing job. He's a real MVP. And for the On Texas Football family, remember, we got the winning drive tomorrow at 4:15 to 5:30. You got coffee and football. All right, that'll be at 8 o'clock. So On Texas Football, we got you covered. Of course, we're talking Texas spring football and Texas football around the clock year-round. We love you guys. Until next time, hook 'em horns.